Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, July 7th, 2017. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. How's it going, Brian?
It goes mostly forward, sometimes a little sideways, occasionally a little kind of back, but you know, like you got this general forward thing going. Good to be here.
So I take it you are back in the groove of the TMO routine?
Yeah, I am. It's good to be back to work.
It's nice to have you back.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hey, thank John Martellaro, how are you?
Good morning. Hi, Brian. That reminds me of the toy by, what, Peter, Paul, and Mary? It goes bump and zip and zip and when it goes around and mostly forward.
Fun fact, unrelated, I think, to Peter, Paul, and Mary, one of my high school nicknames from some friends was the toy.
Ooh.
The more you know.
I don't want you to elaborate on that because I just wrote this amazing tapestry out of that line.
Yeah, same here.
And I don't want you to ruin this for me.
Just wind him up and watch him go.
Yeah. oh my. Okay. Hey, we have topics to talk about. Did it get hot in here? Anyhow, hey, how about this title news? And okay, I'll give everyone a little bit of background before we launch into our discussion. So we have a couple things that have happened. The first thing is that Kanye West has said that he is breaking or ending his exclusivity contract with Tidal for streaming his albums, which is, on one hand, kind of funny for him to say that because albums like Life of Pablo were already streaming on Apple Music, so they weren't exclusive. But anyhow, so he's just ending his exclusivity with Tidal, and he says Tidal owes him over $3 million. They haven't paid him for bonuses and other stuff that he's doing. They haven't paid him for videos that he made for them. And Tidal saying, dude, you still haven't given us videos you're contractually obligated. And anyhow, so they're having a kind of a pissing match. Then Jay-Z, who's the guy that really got the ball rolling for Tidal. He's the guy that
he put together the consortium of musicians who bought a controlling interest in it.
Right. And so he's essentially a co-founder of Tidal, and he took his latest album, 444, and released it exclusively for streaming on Tidal last week. And this week, it's now available on Apple Music, the iTunes Store, and Amazon Music. So we're seeing some of these high-profile founding members step away more from exclusivity with Tidal. And now I want to know what you guys think about this.
Here's what I think. I think that every streaming service that is not supporting a broader platform is doomed to fail, and that includes Spotify. Mm-hmm. I know that Spotify is the biggest streaming service out there. To my knowledge, they're still not making any money. Companies like Apple and Google and even Amazon can afford to have streaming services be anywhere between a loss leader and a service that has a razor thin profit margin because it's going into support of this much larger ecosystem. And Tidal is not in supporting anything else. And I don't think they're viable over the long term. How did Dave put it this morning when we were talking about this in the morning meeting?
In essence, what Dave said is Tidal had a really good thing going for them in that they were offering something no one else was. So they weren't going to be the big name in streaming music. But when they decided that they were going to do the same thing as everyone else, then they lost their advantage.
Yeah, and specifically when they decide to do the same thing as everybody else, but not as well.
Right.
That's essentially what Dave was saying, and that's it's a very astute observation. Tidal's initial selling point, its initial differentiating point, was that they were offering uncompressed streams.
Right.
And they stopped doing that.
Did they stop doing that?
Well, they watered it down, and they're also offering.
They're offering the same thing everyone else is offering.
I don't think that standalone streaming services that aren't supporting a broader ecosystem or a broader product line are truly viable. And I hate to say that. I love Jay-Z. I love many of the musicians I have great respect for many of the musicians who were involved in Tidal. Mm-hmm. And that includes a weird sort of like, did he really just say that kind of respect for Kanye himself?
We can agree to disagree on Kanye.
Yeah. I love that little fella. He's cute. So I don't know what they're gonna do. This is when Jay-Z himself keeps his exclusive has an exclusive deal with Tidal that's measured in days or scores of hours.
In this case, it was days, but yeah, scores of hours sounds a lot better.
Scores and scores of hours. What are they supposed to do? I mean, and Kanye specifically leaving them or ending his exclusivity deal or, whatever it is that Kanye has got his
panties in a bunch about.
Yeah. His knickers in a bunch. Whatever that is, that's not going to be the death knell for a title in any stretch of the imagination, but it is part of this ever evolving pattern where Tidal is finding it difficult to offer exclusive content, and Apple is not. I haven't been paying too much attention to what Google is doing over there, but I would assume that they have at least some exclusive content, and Google doesn't even care. Google makes all its money from ads anyway.
Yeah, the Tidal thing, I see this as a death by a thousand cuts, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's all the little things that are bringing them down. The Jay-Z thing, it was back in April when he finally went exclusive with all his streaming stuff on Tidal. Prior to that, it was still available on Apple Music and other services. Mm-hmm. So really, he went just a matter of months where he was totally exclusive, and then 444 comes out, and within a matter of days, within a score of hours, it wasn't exclusive anymore.
Yeah. So you know what I want though, Jeff? I want to be able to buy and compress music. I want to be able to buy and compress music.
I want to be able to buy uncompressed music without snake oil sales.
Yeah.
And the snake oil sales, what's the artist that came up with the music player and the higher bitrate music where we actually can't hear any difference because it's beyond our hearing range? Who was that?
Oh, Neil Young.
Thank you, Neil Young.
Yeah, that's what what's the name of that?
Exactly. But yeah, he was doing the snake oil sales Pony. Thing.
Ponu? Ponu. Pony? Pony? Pono. There we go. Bingo. We have a winner.
Man, that took some serious brain collaboration. If he had just said, hey, look, we're offering higher quality recordings of music, I would have been pretty excited about that, but he did the snake oil sales thing about.
I'm a huge Neil Young fan. I believe that Neil Young believed everything he said. I don't believe he thought he was selling snake oil.
Oh, I think he believed everything he said too. Doesn't make it not snake oil.
Fair enough. I'm going to have to like throw down a gauntlet or something on Neil's behalf when we see each other at MacStock, which we're going to be at in a week.
That's true.
Yeah. See how I just like slipped that plug right in there?
That was really nice. By the way, I have links in the show notes for MacStock, plus Dave and Brian and I, we're all speaking there. And we all did videos with Chuck Joyner from Mac Voices about our presentations that we'll be giving at MacStock. So if you want a taste of what to expect when you come to the event, and you totally should because we get to hang out, then go watch the videos. Watch them anyhow because they're fun. This whole title thing, I see titles slowly slipping away into oblivion, and I think Sprint's $200 million investment in the company is going to be $200 million lost.
Yeah, and Jay-Z's going to lose a bunch of money, and so are a bunch of other musicians.
Which is unfortunate.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, they try to do something. The big platforms just have a huge advantage here. That's just all there is to it.
They do. Hey, John, you've been stunningly quiet. And I'm sure that's because you're offended by my dislike of Kanye West music.
Not offended at all. I sort of sit in the grandstands on this and watch from a distance. I'm not into music like you guys are. But I find it interesting that Steve Jobs had this initial vision of a central place where you could buy music. You didn't have to steal it, put it on your iPod and play the music that you bought. And all of a sudden everybody decided that that wasn't a good idea and started working on the streaming process where everybody's having a hard time making money, creating and selling music. And it just sort of is interesting to me from a analytical standpoint about how the industry is having such a hard time being driven by what they perceive to be customer interest and needs, as opposed to, you know, really sound business models. And everybody's sort of in a state of disarray, and I'm just sort of sitting back and watching and smiling and wondering what's going on and hoping people will figure it out and make money again.
Well, okay. I think I know something where you might not just sit back and smile, and that's Touch ID. So,
oh, yes.
Okay, here's where I'm going with this. We had a nice discussion about the potential future of Touch ID on Apple Context Machine this week, and then getting Dave and Brian together on Daily Observations to discuss this yesterday, I think was just like a really brilliant insight into where we might be going with this. And you didn't get to weigh in because you weren't on the show. And so I'm really curious, where do you think this is going? And before you answer, I'm going to give people the really quick yesterday on TDO wrap up. The whole thing is there's a report that says that Touch ID will not be on the iPhone 8. And so that's led to speculation about what's going to happen with biometric authentication on the iPhone in the future. And the conclusion that Dave Hamilton came up with yesterday, and I just love, is that there's missing information, which is, you know, stuff got lost along the way as information was coming out, and that this may just be a confirmation that the home button is gone, and then that got conflated into there's no home button, therefore there's no Touch ID, but Touch ID may still be there.
Right. Nice introduction. I took it as a slightly different technical slant in my own article yesterday. Brian, I listened to TDO yesterday, and I thought your observations and Dave's were spot on and just brilliant. And for once, Brian and I are on the same page. Yay!
Wait, hold on. I'm noting the date on my calendar.
I listened to TDO, and I'm going, I was listening, and I was thinking, you know, it's sort of like I'm on TDO, and I wanted to jump in and say something, and I went, oh, I can't. It's a recording. I'm listening. So I'll jump right in now. now that I have a chance, and say, Brian, your observations about Apple's technical astuteness were spot on. And I kind of leveraged on that a little bit. You know, Apple goes through an R&D process and they'd figure out whether they can go into production reliably or not, meeting quality standards and human interface standards and so on. And when they get to that point, they go into production and not before, which is why sometimes Apple seems to be late to the table on certain technologies. And right now we're in a state of confusion. And what I'm noticing is that confusion on the part of the observers is cast as confusion on the part of Apple. And we think, oh no, Apple's screwed. It's 3 months from production. Apple's in disarray. You know, we really don't know what's going on. When will we ever learn? So Apple has its technology development cycle. And when it's fully baked, you know, then they say, okay, we're ready to commit according to the roadmap that we've devised, that we're ready to commit to production. There's lots of testing. And I think along the way, you know, some prototypes are put into production. There's leaks of information that, as you guys said yesterday on TDO, that are confusing because the supply chain doesn't see the whole picture. And the basis of my article was basically that, you know, we're going to be surprised and delighted when it finally comes out. Apple doesn't screw these things up. When has Apple really, except for AntennaGate, what was the iPhone 4? 4S?
Yeah, but that was that was not a user feature, right? That was essentially an engineering failing for something that users shouldn't normally be interacting with at all. When it comes to the way users interact with Apple's devices,
yeah,
I back up your point. When has Apple failed?
I never had that problem, by the way, with the phone. So it was.
Oh, you were holding it, right?
That's right. So whether Apple's going to do, you know, a haptic touch button on the back, or whether they're going to embed it into the display, whether they're going to use facial recognition, Apple is so good with the iPhone. They have so much experience. There's so much at stake with, you know, maybe possibly, what, 90 million iPhone 8s altogether, 7S, 7S Plus, maybe 100 million phones. They'll get it right. And when the picture becomes clear what Apple has done, we'll all go, oh, yeah, that's sensible. And all this confusion on our part is hardly a reflection of Apple's technical confusion. It's just that we're like the men touching the blind men touching the elephant, trying to draw conclusions at this point. And my article said, don't worry, Apple gets these things right. And we'll be surprised and delighted.
Yeah, my expectation is, regardless of what Apple does with the iPhone 8 and future iPhone models, any change that they make is going to be met with resistance because that's human nature. And
but people, there's initial resistance that lasts for scores of hours, and then it tends to evaporate, and we all move along.
That's because their human interface engineers work out the details. They sweat the details. They try things. They experiment. They go into the lab, and they come up with the smart solution instead of the quick response solution. Mm-hmm. And when we're first confronted with it, you know, there is this notion that we evolved from an evolution to make quick responses, the fight or flight threat response, and we make these instant decisions. And that's part of our ancestry and our evolution. But we're not yet a species where we take a long time to think about everything and work out the details and the facts and come up with the smart conclusion. Well, Apple does that ahead of time. So that's why our quick response is usually is wrong. It happened to me on the haptic touch on the iPhone 7. At first, I thought the button felt funny. And now I'm completely used to it and it doesn't bother me at all.
No, I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with the home button on the iPhone as well. So, all right. So then that brings us to the second half of my statement, which is that the real test for these changes will be, do people adapt as they typically do and come to like the features, or will there be a longer term resistance to whatever change Apple makes? And if there's a longer term resistance, then that tells me Apple didn't get it right.
Well, I think what happens is the community explores the options. We do our own testing. We figure out what Apple's up to. We diagnose the over a period of time, like we did with the haptic touch, the usability and the durability of that solution. And we work it all out as a community. And eventually, I mean, a meme surfaces where we back into what Apple was trying to do in the first place. It doesn't take too long. It takes about a month, I think. And then we all figure out how smart Apple was and how stupid we were when it first came out.
Yeah, story of my
life. Yeah, you know, I want a phone with a real keyboard because that's important to me. Still hate that guy in that BlackBerry commercial. Yeah, because that's important to me. I hate that guy.
You know, I never got that whole thing, but I didn't have a smartphone before the iPhone. So I never experienced the physical chiclet super tiny keyboard thing. And my guess is that based on how those keyboards work, I probably would have been really excited to get the virtual keyboard where I could actually type something.
Yeah, because that's important to me.
The virtual keyboard. Yeah. So, Brian, while you're busy beating up
strapping young actor who could probably kick my ass. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, you're busy getting beat up by a fictitious character. Uh-huh. We're out of time.
Oh, darn it.
I know. So we have to wrap up. Brian, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having us, man. Good stuff.
Yep. And we'll work on getting you into some anger management classes for commercial characters. And John, thank you for being here as well.
You're very welcome. Bye, Brian.
Bye.
It's great to have both of you here today. Listeners, I'm so glad you're here with us as well. Thanks for listening. We will see everyone again on Monday.